Good morning. This is the Thursday morning radio zine for January 26th, and now the underwriting. This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Portland Alliance, the city's oldest alternative progressive newspaper, reporting on issues ignored or distorted by corporate-dominated media and providing a voice for social justice activists, environmentalists, trade unionists, and the progressive community. Information at 503-239-4991 or theportlandalliance.org. Also, Portland's gay and lesbian community Yellow Pages, providing a wide array of gay-friendly business listings. More information at 503-230-7701 or www.pdxgayyellowpages.com. Hello, and welcome to the Thursday Radio Zine for January 26th. Right now, it's DIY Portland. Welcome. I'm Julie Sabatier, and this is a new show on KABU, so if you like it, you should call and let us know. The phone number is 503-231-8032, extension 202, and I'll give that out again at the end of the show. In this show, I want to look at all kinds of do-it-yourself projects where people in town are producing rather than consuming the things they need and want. This could be anything from clothing, jewelry, art projects, cooperative bookstores, bicycle repair, self-publishing, music recording, community building projects, and everything else in between. Pretty much anything people are doing for themselves, I want to hear about it. Today, on this very first edition of DIY Portland, we have Kathy Pitters and Tori Wynn. They're two of four women who are part of a collective called PDX Super Crafty. And we also have with us Kim Manchester. She teaches photography and sewing classes at the DIY Lounge in North Portland. Welcome to DIY Portland.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Kim, let's start with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the DIY Lounge, if you would.
Well, the DIY Lounge is a it's a teaching collective in the back of Frock on Alberta Street. And actually, Kathy and Tori are part of the teaching crew there. And Jennifer Neitzel is the woman who started the DIY Lounge. And we kind of work from the angle that we want people to, we want to teach classes that not only teach skills so that people can do it themselves, something like sewing or, silk screening, where there's a specific set of technical things that you need to master, but we also want to build community, and that's not just for adults. We also work with including families, like, mothers and dads with children, that kind of thing, and allowing people to network that way. So that's pretty much what we're trying to do at the DIY Lounge.
Great. And what are the classes that you teach there?
I teach the Anarchist Guide to Sewing, which is pretty much a series of how to make reproductions of the clothes, like your favorite t-shirt or your favorite yoga pants, that kind of thing. Instead of going out and buying, another two or three t-shirts, you can just do it yourself. The other classes I teach are making pinhole cameras. I'm teaching this next month embroidery samplers. There's like a basic stitches, and then there's one, I call them subversive samplers, so you can embroider like political messages or whatever and put that on your wall. And then I also teach a digital camera class.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And Tori, what is the class that you teach over there?
I teach a small business series, so it's kind of how to get your little business up and running. And I also teach a handbag series, so it's I think we've got three different bag styles that you can come and make in three different evenings.
Cool. Great. And Kathy?
Right now, I'm going to be teaching a Shrinky Dink jewelry class.
That's awesome.
How to take your favorite craft when you were a kid and kind of modernize it and make it an adult craft, too. And Tori and I, right before Valentine's Day, we're going to be teaching a pasty making class.
Great. What do you use for your supplies in the pasty making?
Pretty much anything. You just have to create a base, kind of cone-shaped base, and then you just glue whatever you want on there. we had a pasty making party in the DIY lounge when we had the release of our book, and I mean, you wouldn't believe the things people glued on, little baby dolls and bingo pieces.
Chocolates.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny, and it was guys and girls making them. The guys got really into making them.
That's great. It sounds like so much fun. So it sounds like you use a lot of recycled. You were talking about repurposing things for your favorite clothes.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I think Portland, I mean, we have wonderful thrift shops here, and we have, I mean, people really want to recycle what they have. There's, you know, like the clothing trades and parties like that that people kind of just come together and do. And I think that that's a big movement right now, actually. I mean, recycling what you already have or reusing materials is something that used to be really associated with class. And I think now it's more of this kind of political movement where, you know, our culture is so homogenous. I mean, you know, you have suburban developments, you have Walmarts, you have, you know, all these different shops that all produce the same thing everywhere you go. Everything looks the same. And really the only way to be unique is to do it yourself and recycle what you have and, you know, take the sleeves from one sweater, felt them, and make, you know, a stuffed animal or make arm warmers or something like that. And I think that Portland is really good at doing that. So,
yeah. And you talk about that in the Super Crafty book a little bit about sort of the social aspect of repurposing things or also expressing your own individuality.
Yeah, we do. And we really love estate sales and going to thrift stores. And so it feels really good to go and find something that's way more interesting than anything you'd find in a store and then give it a new life and add it on to something you already have or just create this whole new thing that never existed. I think it's fun to go to an estate sale and find something that wasn't finished, and it's like someone spent a bunch of time working on it but never finished it, and then you can take it and either finish it or reuse it in something new. And I think that's really a really cool thing to do. But yeah, I think Portlanders are really good at that, like Kim said, and it creates this great fusion, and there are so many different things that you can see and do with things that already exist around you that it just creates all this really cool stuff.
That's great. And it's one of the things I should mention that Tori and Kathy are also two of the four authors of the Super Crafty book. And it's got over 75 projects, I think.
It does.
Yeah. And one of the great things about that is that you've got ways to modify the project so people can sort of make it their own so it doesn't become like a mass-produced kind of thing. Do you want to talk a little bit about some projects?
Sure. My favorite project in the book is my car curtain. it's like a big, long piece of felt with fringe on it, and you can put it in your windshield of your car and kind of customize your car. When I first got my hand-me-down used car, I wanted to kind of make it my own, and that's what I created to do that.
That sounds like fun. So what kinds of things do you use to decorate it?
I put like some old charms and some velvet flowers and little pictures of Virgin Mary, and then fringe along the bottom.
Cool. You got to have the fringe.
Yeah, you got to have the fringe.
Or those little dingleberry ball thingies, you know, mm-hmm. Little fuzz balls.
Kathy has the most amazing selection of little baubles. She has, her basement is full of all these little trays of perfectly organized tiny little things. It's something to see, but yeah, they're adorning her car curtain, and she looks great driving around town with that.
That's so cool. One of my favorite things, my other favorite projects in the book was the shrines that you talked about. Do you want to tell us a little bit about them?
Oh, yeah. I think we all enjoy making shrines, and Kathy made a really fabulous one for her dad with things that she had from him. And I started one for my grandmother when she passed away, and I still haven't finished it. But I think it's important, just if you need help healing yourself with something, to gather little things that make you think of someone or things that they owned, and then kind of putting them all together just brings back a lot of memories. And I think it's really healing, and I think that we all like to do that just as a process.
Yeah. And there is kind of this therapeutic aspect to crafting, isn't there?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think, I don't even know where I heard this, but I think they had kind of done this study with knitting, that knitting kind of produces the same brain waves that meditation does at a certain point. I think once you get past the teeth grinding stage of like the first few months, but once you get to that point that you're comfortable in it, that you can kind of zone out, and I think it's really healthy to do that. But craft has always had that, you know, the sense of community and the knitting circle, or, you know, the quilting circle, that kind of thing. And, you know, it's a way to talk and a way to heal and to kind of put your emotions into this physical thing that you've put your time and your heart into.
Yeah. And I'm curious why, I mean, you know how to make all these great things and you're all really creative people, and why you've chosen to teach other people how to do it rather than just making stuff and selling it yourselves.
Well, we do both, but I think we all think it's really important to share how much craft impacts your life and what good it brings, and so we want other people to experience that too and to share that with other people. Sort of like how, you know, in a long time ago, people's grandmothers would teach them how to teach, or their mother. It's something that you can share with other people and pass on, and it's definitely worth sharing.
I have people tell me, you know, oh, I'm not crafty, you know, I can't make stuff. And I think anybody can learn to make stuff. Some people, it's not as instinctual, so they need somebody to kind of bring them through the steps. But I think everybody can be crafty.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, it's nice teaching like the small workshops at the DIY Lounge, or like doing, you guys have done a lot of things around town where you just kind of have this almost like this craft happening, you know, where people walk in and they can learn to do shrinky dinks or that kind of thing. I think it's important to overcome people's sense of intimidation about like, well, I don't know how to thread a needle, or I don't know how to, I don't know, to do this or that. And I think that Tori's right about the idea of kind of playing that role of like the grandmother, or, you know, the older aunt, you know, or whatever, that we kind of get people over that hump so that they can go home and feel comfortable experimenting and just kind of taking it on themselves.
And there is this kind of intergenerational sort of women's owning of crafting also, and of do-it-yourself in general. And Kim, you talk a little bit about that on your bio on the DIY Lounge. Can you tell us about it?
The gender.
Mm-hmm.
Thing, oh, okay. I was just saying actually earlier that I think that Portland specifically really, it is a lot. There's a lot of women involved in craft and DIY, but there's a lot of men involved too. And I think Portland has, more than any other city that I've lived in or know of, we really cross the gender lines. It's not about just women being in a collective. It's also about men coming in. And like I was saying before, it's very fluid back and forth. And I think that's one of our strengths here in Portland. And I feel like, but there is that kind of engendered sense of you know, mentorship and community. And is that what you're...
Yeah.
Okay.
And you guys talk a lot about... You girls talk a lot about grandmothers in the Super Crafty book, and as your sort of influences, your mentors, and I thought that was really cool. It seemed to come up a lot, grandmothers.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme.
And it's also interesting because, I mean, you think of knitting or sewing or anything like that as being kind of a grandmother thing, but it seems like our generation is kind of reclaiming it, and it's taken on a whole new modern feel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, too, there's a lot of stuff happening right now. I mean, there's a London Crafters Guild that just did a show a few years ago where a woman did cozies for all the furniture in this house. I mean, the chairs were cozied and the rug was cozied. I mean, everything was crocheted over and just very dainty. And And I think that the line, I mean, that too, the line is being kind of melded in between fine art and craft because people are really taking off. And I think that, you know, being taught skills, being in a community where you can, you know, go to the Church of Craft or you can, you know, go to like a knitting circle or something, and there's artists and there's crafters and there's newcomers, and it just feeds on itself and keeps growing.
Yeah, and it sounds like maybe that's how the DIY Lounge got started.
Yeah, and it's actually, there's this like evolution that's taking place now where it's becoming more community oriented and more politically, or not politically, but artistically oriented, in the sense of there's a couple things in the works where maybe there'll be some installations at some point around town, and some community events that are a little bit larger.
So. And Super Crafty is starting a craft event, aren't you?
We are. We're going to have a monthly event at the Doug for the second Sunday of every month. And if you check our website, more info will be available pretty soon. We're just working out the kinks and getting it all squared away. But we're really excited to give, you know, a venue, a regular venue for people to come and show their art and their craft, and for other people to come and buy it. So we're really excited about it.
Yeah, it sounds great. It sounds great.
They have something similar in Seattle called I Heart Rummage. It's a monthly sale, and we've been thinking for a while that Portland was really lacking something like that. A lot of the sales here are more seasonal, or, you know, during the summer or during the holidays, and it was just, we just thought Portland really needs like a regular venue where people can sell their work that's not Saturday market or, you know, something a little more edgy.
Where there can be pasties, right?
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, another thing we're going to have at the sale is a DIY table where people, Jen from DIY Lounge and hopefully Church of Craft, will be teaching.
Is there a charge for is there a fee for people to sell their work at the Sunday thing? Does it have a name?
We don't have a name yet. We just kind of got confirmation from Doug Fur that we could do it. So it's still in the process of being worked out. We are going to charge a table fee to vendors.
But is there any fee to get in?
No, there won't be a fee to get in.
Cool. And when does it start?
We're hoping to start it in April, so the second Sunday in April.
And we can check your website for that?
We can. PDXSuperCrafty.com.
Great. Cool.
Yeah, info will be up there soon.
And another thing that you all mentioned in the book that I'm curious about is the Church of Craft.
Yes. If you haven't gone, you should definitely go. They meet once a month, usually kind of in the middle on a Sunday. And I think they've been meeting at Rimsky's. And you go for a few hours, you bring a portable craft, or they also teach crafts, like, so they'd give you a supply list ahead of time, and you bring like all your supplies, and then somebody teaches you how to make it. So you can do that, or you can bring your own, and you just sit around the tables and chat with people and craft. And it's a really good way to meet new people and people who share your same interests. And Diane, who started the Portland chapter, is amazing. She's very welcoming, and it's a really fun place to go. Cause as she says, like, when you're crafting, your hands are busy, and it kind of clears your mind so that you're more open to create a more deep relationship with someone that you're talking to. Instead of just having a superficial conversation, you're more open to having, you know, at really creating a bond with someone. And it's really fun.
That's great. That's great. It's such a community aspect to crafting in a group.
Mm-hmm.
That's so refreshing. And there's something else that, Kim, you talked about on the DIY Lounge site about the subversive nature of craft.
Oh, yeah. I really like the tongue-in-cheek kind of political strength that craft has. I mean, I did a project a while ago where I knitted a coded munition in binary code in a sweater and did a border crossing performance with it. So basically was taking something that should not be taken out of the country into another country, but it was knitted, therefore I was allowed to cross, and nobody knew that I was actually doing anything wrong. And just kind of to make the point that just because it's craft and just because it's quote-unquote women's work doesn't mean that it can't be political. And I think craft, and because it's community, because there's so much community around craft And because there's so much about the conversation and opening up and creating bonds with people who aren't necessarily your family, it is political. It is political to make your own things. It is political to DIY.
Yeah, and in the true sort of feminist tradition, it's the personal is the political.
It is. Yeah, definitely. So, I definitely took that cue.
And you're working on a zine, is that right?
I am, and it's around the same thing. It's called Idle Hands, Arts, Craft, and Gender. And it's about, like, right now I'm writing an essay on the popularity of knitting in relation to war, starting from World War I, World War II, and then obviously now, and how knitting becomes this way of not only being supportive of, like the Red Cross, making socks for the soldiers kind of thing as part of your patriotic duty, but also as a way to relieve stress and kind of make a sense of, get in touch with people, kind of have a communal activity to comfort oneself, to feel like you're doing something, to feel like you're, I think it comes from that meditative sense of knitting, so... I don't know if that makes sense, but
sure. Yeah. And are you finding that that men are doing that also now that you're looking at sort of knitting in this time and in this war?
Yeah. I mean, at present, I'm looking at a lot of history, and I'm looking at the archives in the Library of Congress, that kind of thing. And it's all been online so far. So, but there's a few places around town that I want to kind of come to the, like at Mabel's, they have a men's knitting night, I think, on Wednesdays, and I want to go to that and talk to people about that. So the zine's going to have articles like that and hopefully some guest crafters to come in and write maybe about gardening or a lot of DIY stuff, bike mechanics, that kind of thing.
Great. That's great. Yeah, that's the great thing about DIY is that it touches so many different aspects of the community.
Definitely.
There's so much you can do with it. Can you tell me a little bit about Sasquatch Press, just quickly? It's the press that put out your book, right?
Yeah, they were great to work with. They're pretty small. They're based out of Seattle. And I don't remember exactly what their tagline is, but they have regional books that have like a national appeal. So they publish mostly Northwest artists and authors, and they're a great company.
That's cool. It's interesting. I'd never heard of them before I went to Reading Frenzy and saw you guys doing Shrinky Dinks. And are kids part of the DIY lounge? Like, some of the classes are geared towards children.
Yeah. There's a lot of parent child classes. Like, and in fact, we actually hosted a birthday party a couple of months ago, which was awesome. It was a little girl's, I think her fourth birthday, and we had about 10 kids, and we taught them how to make fairy wings and crowns. And I mean, it was really simple, but it was great. It was a lot of fun. And there's more classes that are more geared to kind of community building, and we're thinking about targeting like the teen community and bringing in boys and girls to come in and knit or, make clothes or that kind of thing. So,
great.
Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time. I know the half hour just sort of flew by for me, but is there anything that you all want to just throw out there just as a last word?
I'm really happy that you're doing this show. I'm very excited to hear what comes next.
Well, thanks. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. And this is a new show on KBOO, so if you like it, give us a call, 503-231-8032, extension 202, and leave a message or just tell us what you think. So the collective has a book out. It's called Super Crafty, and it has 75 how-to projects from shrines to pasties. and you can get it at Reading Frenzy, which is on Southwest Oak across from Powell's. You can also find them on the web, pdxsupercrafty.com. And you can sign up for Kim's sewing and photography classes at the DIY Lounge, diylounge.com. And Kim also has a website of her own. It's kimmanchester.org. And you can find her zine, Idle Hands, there when it comes out, right?
Yep. In March.
March. Okay, great. So you've been listening to DIY Portland, new show on KBOO. I'm Julie. And thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell. She'll tell you all the news you're not supposed to know.